Although the guests will be different, we are continuing the discussion of ongoing research regarding free energy and levity devices / vehicles. I can't say anti-gravity devices because part of the reason they work is because the technology isn't anti-anything. They use the laws of the physical universe, which today's guest, Ralph Ring, says is simple. You must always work with Mother Nature. Force is never necessary. Ralph is a brilliant, innovative technician who, in the late 1950s and early 60s, worked with Otis T. Carr. Otis was a protege of Nikola Tesla, who built some working flying discs using these laws of the physical universe. Joining Ralph is his research assistant and wife, Marcia Ring. Wireless transmission of power is truly wireless reception of energy. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Marcia, I'd like to ask you how you came into this inner circle of potentiating free energy, anti-gravity devices, and the realization that universal capacities cannot be patented.
That could not be patented. Basically, I came into this circle in early 1980 when I met Ralph and his lady at that time, Ruth. And I told Ralph I was having spiritual meetings in my home, and a mutual friend of ours invited him to come and speak. And after he told his story of working with Otis Carr, and he had a lot of diagrams and so forth and shared with all of us, my mom said, oh, I remember seeing an article in the San Bernardino Sun. My mom and dad lived in Barstow, California, about 35 miles away from Apple Valley, where Ralph and Otis Carr did their spacecraft. Never did I wonder or doubt that Ralph's story was truth. And so he and his wife would invite me to go and share in the different scientific things about natural energy, and I'd go to meetings with them, and that's how it all started for me. Prior to that, I worked for Bendix Deep Space Tracking Station in Barstow, California. So I've been involved with the spaceship or the space program. So I had been involved with that for quite a few years prior to meeting Ralph. The natural energy part was all after I met Ralph and understanding of what is out there for us.
Yes, and it's interesting, and we will learn more and more chatting with you both today of the intimate relationship between spirituality and what we've got going on with this type of technology.
It's oneness, and it is beautiful. Yes, it really is, Robin.
Ralph, your turn.
Okay.
I know eventually we will start talking about the anti-gravity device that Ben Hallett is currently building in Australia, but let's begin with your story. I know you did work with Otis Carr, and it's my understanding that Otis Carr actually worked with Tesla.
He was a protege for about 3 years. He met Tesla while he was supplementing his education. He worked as a desk clerk at the New Yorker Hotel where Tesla was the resident. And they became quite close because Carr was always interested in science, especially anything to do with meta-science beyond the accepted physics and so forth. And Tesla supplied him with loads of information, and Carr, like a sponge, soaked it all up. Tesla was kind of winding down because of his experiences, and he told Carr that his efforts had been put on hold and that we needed to carry it forward before the Earth collapses into chaos and try and effectively get the truth back out to the people of what can be done with technology, what is already happened in the ether in the way of technology, that for hundreds and thousands of years we've had ups and downs, and our civilizations have rose to the peak and then collapsed. Tesla wanted to bring this information back, and he was dedicated to the science and the spirituality of life itself, and he passed this on to Carr. And after 3 years, Carr decided to, well, even before the 3 years, he started his own laboratory in Baltimore, Maryland. He had OTC Enterprise started and started developing free and alternative energies for people. The idea of a spaceship was a greater idea. The fundamental part of a spaceship is called a Utron electrical accumulator. That's not a generator. Accumulates the energy from the ethers and puts it into usable electricity. It's all basically magnetism, and it's everywhere in the multiverse. You can go as far as you want in the multiverse and never run out of fuel because it's all magnetic in nature. That being said, he started putting these neutrons together and decided, let's just go for a spaceship, because that's what he wanted to do, and incorporate the neutron. The spinoff would be that people could have models they could build themselves and eventually put them in their homes or run their automobiles or anything electrical off of these accumulators and free people off the grid system, get them off of energy dependency. Free energy, which has always been available, but it's been metered and cut down into pieces and segments and kept people from being who and what they really are. They're really beautiful beings, and they accepted the servitude and toiling for a living and the idea that you have to do anything. And that's really a misnomer. You do what you feel is right, period. Anyhow, that's how it happened. He, for 3 years, worked with Tesla, got some ideas. He told them everything should be totally wireless. There's no need for wires or telephone poles to transmit electricity. Electricity is everywhere. When we move our hands, we create static electricity. It's everywhere. It's fully abundant. Carr created a laboratory, and he had some very good engineers and physicists that he was working with, and together they started building spaceships.
Well, it's interesting how it's even reflected in the language. It's not generating anything. It's accumulating. There's a slight difference there, but it's a huge difference at the same time.
Yes, you understand perfectly.
The difference between natural science and man-made science. And man-made science is still in that little boy, let's smash these atoms together mentality.
Yes, suppressed the rest of the the world in the ideas that they can do something that nature can't. Or they always try to stop nature with dams, and they dam this and dam that and try to do it themselves. And without nature, you've got nothing. Without natural law, you have absolutely a turnabout. You've got a squirrel cage or a ramp that goes around and around, revolving instead of evolving. Evolving comes when you follow the laws of nature. You can go from one step to the other and never run out of excitement or ideas or creations. But when you get into man-made laws like our physics, the first, second laws of thermodynamics and so forth, you get stuck there. They don't go any further because they say you can't. And nature says you can do any darn thing you feel like.
I like nature.
Yes, there is a big difference. There is an incredible difference. And consciousness comes into play, and consciousness is a big factor. You have to be consciously aware of who you are and how your connection to and with nature synergize and resonate together, because that's the creative powers of forever and always. It just goes on forever. The only thing that kind of slows it down is the man-made laws and ideas and the resistance to anything outside of its own circumference. Its own circle. And they have created big petroleum companies, big gas and electric companies, and all these things that are controlling now the servitude that people are experiencing. They're having trouble making their payments, having trouble keeping their jobs, etc. And it's all because it's been controlled by humans, and it's not necessary.
Ralph, let's move into how you met Otis and some about your early work with him.
Sure. I supplemented my research and development. I created a diving business, and I eventually worked with U.S. divers and Jacques Cousteau in Southern California. My wife thought it was eventually too dangerous and and I had to stay away from home too much. So she found me a job at, it was called Advanced Kinetics. I got the job just coincidentally because I had no experience as a lab tech per se, only my interest in natural law and the experiments that I was conducting in my lab at my house. And Dr. Weinhardt was the director of the institute, and when I mentioned magnetism, apparently one of his engineers had just quit, and he put me to work on their magnetic job that they had. And that consisted of just running an electron through a magnetic field without deflection. In other words, just had a magnet with positive and negative, and there's a cathode ray tube, like out of an old television set, only this was much more elaborate because it was a government-funded laboratory and it was very expensive equipment. All I had to do was fire this electron from A to B without deflection. And I had this giant oscilloscope and giant Polaroid camera. And each time I fired it, I'd have to take a picture and write up the experiment. And it was just a very short time before I became absolutely bored because they were trying to force nature to do something she doesn't do. She doesn't want to be forced. And she'll always deflect to the positive or negative side of this magnet. I was getting very, very upset because they weren't following natural law. And the more that I tried to talk to them about it, they said, no, we'll just use more force and just keep increasing the power, and eventually we'll force this electron to do something that we want it to do. And I was saying inside, no, you won't. No, you can't. And so anyway, the next bench over was working on levitation. And they were levitating these steel balls for, 4 or 5 minutes, and they'd burn these coils up, which were very expensive. They had to go check out another coil about every half an hour or so. And this, to me, was another waste of time. They were creating levitation, but they were using a very antiquated way of doing it. Tore apart some stuff I'd got from garage sales and yard sales, and created an identical experiment for about $100.
Ralph, what year are we talking right now?
1958, okay. 59. That tore it apart, made an identical experiment. I just tore apart a television set, got the cathode ray tube out, and set up a couple of magnets. And the thing that I did was pulse the signal. I just gave the chance for the electron to breathe, and everything in nature has to breathe. That's what we do. That's why we're alive. We're breathing in and out. There's a pulsing going on. And man-made technology uses force. It doesn't give nature a chance to pulse the signal. So what I did was pulse the signal. And the first electron I got through the field without deflection, and I took 20, 30 other shots, and they were all perfect. They got through the field without deflection. So I wrote it up, took pictures, and said, I'm apt to get a raise out of this, I thought. So the other thing I was curious about was the levitation thing, and I said, oh, gosh, I saw a movie at one time, an 8-millimeter old film. In Tibet, they use these giant horns and drums to raise these huge blocks up the side of cliffs. So I thought, well, I'll just experiment with acoustical levitation for now. And I took a 15-inch woofer speaker and put it on the floor, and I hooked up a audio amplifier. This creates a parabolic center, like a speaker on its backside. And so in the center of the cone, I started putting different things in that I thought might resonate with the sound waves and levitate. And eventually I found the ping pong ball, and that baby came up in the center of the cone and just sat there. It was up, I don't know, 28,000, 29,000 hertz, somewhere in there. I was getting tired, and I went to bed that night, but when I woke up in the morning, the ping pong ball was still levitating. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to write this one up, take pictures, take it in, and again, hope for a raise. Well, I did all that, and I took it in to Dr. Weinhardt, and I said, here, I think I solved your problem here. And I'm just a lab tech. I'm not an engineer, but I said, this is what I found that'll work. No deflection, and here's natural levitation without any force. Well, he looked it all over and read my report, saw my photos, And he said, yeah, Ralph, I know I'm a physicist and I understand where you went with this, but you've got to understand where you are. And I said, well, where am I? And he said, well, you're in a government-funded research and development laboratory, and we get our grants and our funds for looking for answers and not finding them. And this was the greatest shock of my life. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. My heart dropped to my feet. I couldn't believe it. I thought, well, that's what this life is all about. You try to make it better all the time, not go somewhere and stop. And that's apparently what he was talking about. And he said, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to go back to work and not talk to the engineers or anybody else about this. And I'm going to have to shred this. I'll see that you get a little more money in your envelope, but this is taboo. We don't do that here. In my shock, because I was toiling for a living at that point, I went back to work, but it lasted less than 2 weeks. I had tears in my eyes when I was leaving the place because I could not believe that all this money and all this time and all this investment in this equipment, and they were really not wanting to find answers, just look for them. So I left. I met a neighbor, and I was crying on his shoulder about it, and I told him why, and he said, well, you know, you're experimenting outside the box. He says, I've got a lot of other people that do the same things, and we meet once a week. How about joining us? This was in Costa Mesa. The name of the group was Understanding, and it was created by a fellow by the name of Daniel Fry. And all he wanted to see people do is find the answers to the true answers to something. Don't let it go till you know the truth. So he created this kind of a think tank, people from all walks of life just wanting to know the truth, not what they've been told or what seems to be, but they wanted to know what was really going on. I told them my story, and they said, oh, this thing about magnetism, what is it? And I said, well, it's been my interest all my life. I was raised in the woods until I graduated from grade school. In fact, the grade school was in the woods. We had no running water, no electricity or anything. During that time, I learned about natural law, and I learned that magnetism is the glue that holds everything together. Without exception, everything is magnetic in nature. So I said, my goal then is to see floating homes, get them off the ground, and floating cities, floating countries, if you will. There's no reason why we couldn't do this. He said, well, you sound like a guy that's building flying saucers or spaceships. He's in Norman, Oklahoma. This was Carr. He had put in a patent for a spaceship. He put in his patent the ideas of levitation and teleportation, resonance, and vibrations. And they said, none of that's allowed. We can't use any of those connotations. You can't patent any of those things. You pull those out, we'll give you a patent on an amusement device, and you can do whatever you want to with that. So he says, okay. He pulled out. He says, well, I'm going to write this book. I'm paraphrasing all this. He wrote a book called Dimensions of Mystery. That book's been around for 50 years, and nobody's thought much about it because it was beautiful poetry, beautiful prose, just talking about the laws of nature. Like a bumblebee at high noon with the sun coming through its wings would resonate on the flower at a certain angle. Well, that meant nothing to a poet, but beautiful nature. But to a scientist, when you delve into what's called ether technology, that's dealing above and beyond the human conception of life, you're seeing the sacred geometry of how things work. So he wrote this book and said, someday, when somebody comes along, when the time is right and decodes this book, that's the time that free energy will be able to come back and never be stopped again. Everything he wrote down, he was getting from his intuition, not his foregone education or anything, but from his intuition. He dealt solely with his intuition on everything, and that tied him in closely on seeing a tree branch with snow on it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon meant nothing to people reading it, but everything to a scientist that said, well, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that means the azimuth has to be here, the sun has to be at this angle, et cetera, et cetera. So he incorporated all of that, and I think he was being helped by the spirit and the nature. Nature itself wants to see happen, to fill the void and the vacuum of emptiness that has been happening to the world.
One thing that just so fascinated me and drew me in reading Dimensions of Mystery and what Ben Hallett has done with his translation, reading pages of sacred geometry mathematics And then all of a sudden it says, I hope you all clearly see that the only desire you should ever have is the desire to acquire God awareness in you for the purpose of extending God's nature as your nature, his power as your power, and his knowing as your knowing. What went off in my head at that point was, aha, here is the bridge that people these days want to build. They always want to bridge science and spirit, you know, that proverbial gap. And I thought, aha, well, here it is right here.
Indeed. Thank you. That's perfect. Perfect. Ben got a hold of the book, and he said, I can decode this. Using his spirit of what he is, he's a very dedicated person to the laws of nature, was able to start decoding the dimensions of mystery, realizing that we're not in charge of anything. Nature is. God is. It's always been, and it always will be that way. We are free. We've just been told we weren't.
Yes. It's fascinating also that here's Otis Carr doing all of this work in the 50s and 60s, very much pre-heart math specialists who talk about the heart and the brain and what is really the brain. And here's Otis Carr talking about how the human brain tissue is sending less signals than the heart tissue actually is sending to the brain, and that all we really need to do is send the control signal of pure love to flood the brain and then just, wow, see what can happen.
Yeah.
And it was,
and
so
then you're guided. You don't have to do anything. In fact, trying gets in the way.
Exactly.
You can just sit back and let nature give you all of secrets of the multiverse forever and ever. You never have to do a darn thing but be who and what you are.
Back to what you originally said when we got started about the accumulation rather than the generation.
Correct. It's exactly it. We are truly energy beings, if you will. We are truly light beings, a magnificent talent that's been buried in servitude and conformatism and bureaucracies and all the other things that people have bought into that are not necessary at all. For pure living, all you have to do is be who you are and stand up and be strong enough to say, well, if you want me to do something that I don't feel is right, I'm going to quit and quit or get fired and be happy because another door will be opening for you. But most people live in a sense of fear. There's a movie that explained a principle, a point to me, and that movie was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he was rescuing a girl across this gigantic abyss, and the bridge caved in on him, and the bad guys were after him from behind, and he knew he had to get across this thing to not only rescue the girl, but to save himself and whatever else was involved. And he had nothing left but his intuition. He had nothing left but to go to the powers within his own being that told him, step off, step off. And he stepped, and all of a sudden there was a bridge there, an invisible bridge that came to light. And that's the same with taking a step with faith or trust in natural law.
Exactly,
that
yes.
It doesn't apparently seem to be anything of great value or interest when you look at it. But if you dare to take the step into exploring it, understanding it, you've opened a door that lasts forever, because there's endless things that are connected to what we call ether technology or esoteric understanding.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that movie, because I wanted to talk a little bit about something you've got on your website about the Jedi Knights and how it's not a figment of George Lucas's imagination, and the records in Egypt and Persia that really draw the common ground of the Sufis and Jedi, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that you brought that up, Marcia and I are both in the Knights Templar. Knighthood, first of all, is the dedication to spirit, to the spirit of life itself, to the illuminated consciousness of life, of Christ consciousness, if you will, being very, very close to the source of everything, which is nature in the raw, or God in its essence. Knighthood originally dedicated itself to helping people find that within themselves, to go internally for their information instead of externally. The people trying to come to the Holy Land, and they would be ambushed and robbed and tortured and so forth by bandits along the way, so the knights pledged themselves to protect them. So in their marches to the Holy Lands, the knights would always be there to see that they could fulfill their lives in the way and means that they chose instead of being told what to do. All our great information has been passed down from storytellers, not from scientific facts or reason or logic. They just came from stories, and stories come from the imagination and metaphors. They also come from the heart, and you feel it as you're speaking it, as you're saying it. You're being guided by your love for life itself. Marcia and I both know quite a few indigenous people, and we love to converse with them because they come from their heart. They don't have a lot of things that conventional linear education provides, but they have heart, and when they speak and they tell their stories, we are wide open. We are listening and feeling with our hearts the essence, the principles in the stories, and that's what counts, is the principle, not the, well, prove to me electricity exists. Well, that's the same thing as proving that God or nature exists. You have to experience it.
Let's talk about your work with Otis Carr now and the OTC.
OTCX1. Carr was running into trouble in Norman, Oklahoma. Some of his experiments weren't going too well. He had a mercury leak in one of the experiments and caused him to be laid up for a while. The system was trying to shut him down. They didn't want to hear about free and abundant energy or levitation or teleportation or resonant frequencies of anything. They made claims that he was a fraud. He was trying to do something that was impossible. And so our group, the Understanding Group, said, well, let's call him. They contacted Carr, and they brought him and his entourage out to California, and we were put up at Lake Arrowhead for a while, and they said, well, just stay there till we can find a place for you guys to operate. And that's where I got to know Carr and the expansion of consciousness that I got just by being in his presence. Everything is consciousness, and you are creating everything with your imagination. It's the most powerful force we have, and how you use it is where life depends.
We're back next week with Ralph and Marcia Ring. Their website is bluestarenterprise.com, and this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the KGNU studios, we'll be showing Bradley Lockerman's documentary on the John Searle story, our guest from the previous 2 weeks. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.